Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm here to share with you about my latest trip to Haiti, which was back in October, so I apologize for the delay, but there's been some issues. I'm going to talk about those issues. So, first, my typical disclaimer. I'm going to be presenting far more questions than answers here during this time. So basically, here's the lowdown. Last August, I was prompted to put together another team to go down to Haiti to do a typical short-term mission trip, go build something, and contribute to that rebuilding process down there. This church has been part of many trips over the past few years. I've been a part of a few of them. And so the second objective was to reconnect with a former partner of ours, Partners with Haiti. We've had a relationship with them, but it's, you know, we support them financially, but we haven't done a trip with them in recent history, so we were going to try and do something with them. So long story short, I could not put a team together. It did not happen. It was too short notice. A lot of other reasons I didn't probably handle it right, but basically I ended up going down by myself. I ended up going down there meeting Bob St. Julian, who's on the board with Partners. And because he had a trip down there, so I asked him to tag along. And the objective became, well, I'm going to find a project that we can latch on to and become a part of. And so that became the goal. And so right off the plane, we went straight to Afka Village. Afka is a 10-acre parcel that Partners owns. They've had it for about 25 years. It's right in the heart of Port-au-Prince. It consists of a large church, schools, a health clinic, and several housing units. Right now, it's overrun by squatters just basically because the walls came down. That's a whole different story I can't even get into now. But we were focusing on the church and how the needs that it had there to be finished. And so, I mean, right off the bat, I'm feeling the heat. I'm feeling the vibe. I'm like, this is it. This is our project. You know, we're going to I started making plans. I'm thinking, we need blueprints, we're going to need this, we're going to need that. You know, I'm excited. I've got it figured out. I'm going to make this work. And but as time wore on, I was only there for about 3 days, and as time wore on, as we went to more places and I went and saw more half-finished schools and half-finished churches and miles of broken roads and thousands of tent cities and people and just the masses of humanity, I began to get restless and just really uneasy, and I didn't really know what it was. Looking back, you could say my spirit became jarred maybe and suffered a little from what they call compassion fatigue. And what fatigued me was the enormity of it all. And I've, every time I've talked about it, I don't ever want to try and describe it because it's really, you can't describe it unless you see it and experience it. But the chaos and the devastation that still exists, the millions of people that live within the city, and they all walk pretty much everywhere. And I think I saw every single one of them during my 3 days there. And it becomes overwhelming. There's just no relief. There's no relief from the bad roads. There's no relief from just the absolute chaos, which is there, which is the country. And I was getting really neurotic about the roads. It was just driving me crazy. Maybe it's just because of the work that I do. I'm just like, because I knew all the billions of dollars that had been down there, and it didn't seem like one penny had been spent fixing the roads, and it was just, I don't know. But so I found myself asking why this and why that, and I realized that my goal and what I wanted to do wasn't going to work. It just, something was broken, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so during this time, I'd been corresponding with Bruce Hanlon, who we were just talking about, who's a friend of mine, and we were talking about issues that weren't even related to Haiti. We were talking about Africa. And he had recommended a book called When Helping Hurts, and that's this book. Okay? And so as soon as I got home, I ordered it. I bought it on CD. I listened to it over and over again. It was really kind of, for some reason, addressing all the things that I was feeling, the frustrations about what I was feeling during my trip. And the subtitle of the book is How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. And it's that last part which I really kind of latched on to. I mean, the whole thing was important. And the reason I'm talking about the book is because it really dealt with the heart of that frustration that I felt. And the main frustration was the question, is this working, what we do? You know, what, especially our part going down there and our relationships with them. And one of the keys that the author discusses is a broader definition of poverty. And in a blurb from the website, he says this: how we answer the question, what is poverty, determines the solutions we propose. A misdiagnosis of the problems related to poverty results in remedies that are ineffectual and even harmful. Good intentions are not enough. Unfortunately, Christians often have faulty assumptions about the root causes of poverty and its solutions. As a result, we often end up hurting people living in poverty and ourselves in the process of trying to help them. The challenge is to see poverty as more than just an economic problem. So he broadens poverty into more of a relational issue, and he has four different basic relationships. And then there's another way that the definition of it, and poverty is the result of relationships that do not work. They are not just, they are not for life, they are not harmonious or enjoyable. Poverty is the absence of shalom and all its meaning. And this was a breakthrough for me because it made the problem so much bigger than what I could do, what I felt that could be fixed, because it just, I guess the best word is it's systemic. It was just, and then it also was, it affected me, and it affected me because I had always viewed it as an economic problem and just one-sided, meaning they're poor, we're not, they have the problem, and we don't. So you give someone who's poor money and they're no longer poor. But if the relationship with their families, their community, their government, and their God is broken, then no amount of money will fix those relationships, and the material poverty will return. Just as our material wealth does not make us complete. Okay, so, and I'm not trying to say, you know, here in America, we've got it great. Places like Haiti and Africa, they're broken. That's not what it's about. They're material poor, we can see that. But the thing that was affecting me was that, can you see my... It, well, this is what the book really helped me see. It helped me see my sides of poverty and myself, and not my material poverty. But can you see my poverty of being, my God complex that is fueled by my desire to go to places like Haiti or Africa and to fix stuff, to make it better, to make it right, to be the hero? Look what I've done for you. Look what I've given you. Aren't I great? What I discovered is how I'm seeking to do this only feeds my own spiritual poverty, my poverty of being, at the same time perpetuating my God complex, my Savior mentality, and it's something I'd never considered. Nor do I think we've considered the negative effect that it has on the recipient. When you're constantly surviving via handout and with gifts, you've never learned how to provide for yourself, plus your self-esteem will naturally begin to wither, which then erodes your ability to be productive in your family and your society. Can you see my poverty of community, my self-centeredness, and independent self-reliance to a fault? Can you see my poverty of stewardship, my workaholic tendencies, and my materialism? Can you see my poverty of spiritual intimacy, my heart, and my relationships behind closed doors? So I return with more questions than answers. And that's why I bring this book, because if you have if there's any stirring in you as far as wanting to help out besides just spending money or fixing the problem, then this kind of goes into it a lot deeper. And I want to just close with a couple pages just from here that really kind of, to me, symbolizes kind of how I feel about the whole situation, not only in Haiti but in other places. And this is the author's reading is saying this. One Sunday, I was walking with a staff member through one of Africa's largest slums, the massive Kibera slum in Nairobi, Kenya. The conditions were simply inhumane. People lived in shacks constructed out of cardboard boxes. Foul smells gushed out of open ditches carrying human and animal excrement. I had a hard time keeping my balance as I continually slipped on oozy brown substances that I hoped were mud but feared were something else. Children picked through garbage dumps looking for anything of value as we walked deeper and deeper into the slum. My sense of despair increased. This place is completely godforsaken, I thought to myself. Then to my amazement, right there among the dung, I heard the sound of a familiar hymn. There must be Western missionaries conducting an open-air service in here. I thought to myself as we turned the corner, my eyes landed on the shack from which the music bellowed. Every Sunday, 30 slum dwellers crammed into this 10 by 20 foot sanctuary to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The church was made out of cardboard boxes that had been opened up and stapled to studs. It wasn't pretty, but it was a church. A church made up of some of the poorest people on earth. When we arrived at the church, I was immediately asked to preach the sermon. As a good Presbyterian, I quickly jotted down some notes about the sovereignty of God and was looking forward to teaching this congregation the historic doctrines of the Reformation. But before the sermon began, the service included a time of sharing and prayer. I listened to some of the poorest people on the planet cried out to God. Jehovah Jireh, please heal my son as he is going blind. Merciful Lord, please protect me when I go home today, for my husband always beats me. Sovereign King, please provide my children with enough food today, as they are hungry. As I listened to these people praying to be able to live another day, I thought about my ample salary, my life insurance policy, my health insurance policy, my two cars, my house, etc. I realized that I do not really trust in God's sovereignty on a daily basis, as I have sufficient buffers in place to shield me from most economic shocks. I realize that when these folks pray the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread, their minds do not wander, as mine often does. I realize that while I have sufficient education and training to deliver a sermon on God's sovereignty, with no forewarning, these slum dwellers were trusting in God's sovereignty just to get them through the day. And I realize that these people had a far deeper intimacy with God than I probably will ever have in my entire life.